Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg steps out today. Much anticipated is probably an understatement. Facebook makes its debut today on the NASDAQ as a public company. As of last night, as investors raced to get shares, Facebook's offer had risen to $38 per share. That puts the total value of the company at $104 billion, a staggering amount. But for investors who got burned in the dot-com bubble of the late 1990s, all of this hype and hysteria over Facebook is a little too familiar.
What we saw in the dot-com period was that the public markets came down into a space where companies were product, hadn't validated business models, hadn't scaled. But that was a freak event. That had to do with the fact it was a moment of disruptive technology.
Right there, you're hearing the voice of Julie Mayer, founder of Ariadne Capital, speaking to our partner, the BBC. And we have two guests with us today who lived through that dot-com boom and were there when the bubble burst. Dan Wagner, internet entrepreneur, and Henry Blodgett, CEO and editor-in-chief of Business Insider. Henry, is she correct? There was the dot-com period a freak event, and we can't make comparisons between that and today's hype over Facebook?
Oh, you can always make comparisons. Listen, bubbles like the dot-com boom are part and parcel of free market capitalism. They've happened since the dawn of time, and they will happen until the end of time. They are, fortunately, relatively rare, especially in the same sector. And I think there is almost no comparison between what was happening in the 1990s and what is happening now with a few companies like Facebook.
Although, Dan, it can be said that it's tech stocks itself that are kind of the freak stocks, because we don't really have great ways to evaluate how much an internet company is worth, right?
Well, I'm not so sure. I mean, it is easy to see that the potential is there. When you look at how Facebook has grown its revenues 1,300% in just 3 years and has made moved from a loss of $56,000 to a profit of $1 billion in 3 years, I mean, those sort of numbers are just mind-boggling and demonstrate how huge the market of the internet is for companies that are able to leverage the user base. And with Facebook's 900 million users representing, the third largest nation in the world, you just get some idea of how enormous this company has become in such a short period of time. And that's what the internet drives for new market entrants. I mean, it drives the potential to reach a global audience. That was never possible with a high street store that opened on a corner in 34th Street and Broadway.
All right, but Henry, at this point, I mean, I think it would be useful for people to look back at the companies that survived the dot-com bubble and those that didn't, and what made the difference. I mean, the companies that came through the dot-com bubble as successful companies, what separated them from those that failed?
Well, I think just to hammer home what Dan just said, because it's incredibly important, one of the biggest differences between now and then, especially with respect to Facebook, is that you can argue about what Facebook's stock is worth, and I suspect that when it starts trading today, it will be very expensive, and there will be a lot of downside, and things will have to go perfectly for the company in order for the stock to move higher from there. But nobody is saying that it's going to go to zero or what have you. The fundamentals underneath are incredibly powerful. If you go back to the 1990s and look at the companies that survived, Amazon, Yahoo in a fashion, Google grew out of that period, although it was a little bit later, eBay. Most of them were the leaders in their markets. Most of them actually had very good financials in the beginning, with the exception of Amazon, which lost a lot of money in part because that was the decision they made. But they were great companies underneath the excitement around them. People loved Amazon. Yahoo grew spectacularly quickly. So the companies that came through it were the ones that were very established, and they were able to survive the bubble bursting.
And what did the IPO do for those companies, especially those that were successful that Henry just mentioned? What did the IPO, in terms of the growth that came with it, help them to achieve?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, they've become, you know, dominant players, many of them in their respective fields. But what it fundamentally did was it provided access to capital. And, you know, you must remember that it's been a fairly bleak time, particularly in Europe, for access to capital for technology companies or any companies, actually. And what this is doing, what this we hope will do, is will open up access to capital to other companies, some of which will be winners and some of which may not be winners. I think there'll be more discerning investment into these companies, i.e. companies which just have an idea and no real business model of how to demonstrate traction in those markets, won't get funded as they did in the dot-com period, in the dot-com bubble. But I think now companies that do have a genuine potential to drive revenue, value, and opportunity will get funded, and that's a very good thing. So this Facebook IPO is really good, and the momentum in the markets in the U.S. are really good for the global economy, not just for Facebook investors.
And perhaps, Henry, what did we learn, or did we learn, from the dot-com bubble as investors in terms of evaluating one tech company from another?
Well, I think it was a searing lesson for a lot of investors, myself included. I was late to downgrade the stocks. I was an analyst at the time that I was covering, and I thought it might be a bubble. It certainly looked like that, but there are two ways of playing that. One is you just sit on the sidelines and you miss all these extraordinary gains, which is very painful as it's happening, or you say, well, I'll get out before it breaks, and I think that's a mistake that a lot of people made, and certainly it's a mistake that I made. But I think, unfortunately, what people learn is that they learn that they should never, ever buy another tech stock, and what happens then is that they miss out on a lot that's happened, not in the public market so much, but just generally. But the interesting thing now is in the United States, we now, of course, went right from the tech bubble to the housing bubble, and everybody came off tech stocks and said, well, those were tech stocks. That was ridiculous. Now houses are totally safe. And then everybody got burned in that, and now you have a whole generation of people who either can't or don't want to go into houses. And so once you get burned, what's going to happen is you'll probably miss the upside of the next one, but hopefully you'll come through it without getting hurt the way a lot of people do. But I think the main point is that was a time when lots of people who should not have been speculating in stocks were speculating. Professionals have done this forever, venture capitalists, and that is something they will continue to do, and they are making incalculable amounts of money on Facebook because they speculated on it early when it was so risky.
That's Henry Blodgett. He is the CEO and editor-in-chief of Business Insider, and Dan Wagner also joined us, internet entrepreneur. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.